find out what's going on in the world, the state,
and in your own backyard.
This is a Civic Media Network News Update.
Good morning. It's 8 a.m. I'm Luke Mathers, and here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Governor Tony Evers is expected to call a special session today of the state legislature to debate child care funding. Terry Bell reports.
Evers and Democratic lawmakers tried to expand state help for the child care industry during the budget process. In the end, they only got a fraction of what they wanted. Industry leaders say the Child Care Counts program is keeping their vital service in business, but federal pandemic support is scheduled to run out at the end of the year. Evers has called a dozen special sessions since taking office, but Republican lawmakers often gavel in and gavel out those sessions without any debate. Terry Bell, Civic Media News.
Wisconsin Attorney General Josh Call wants a Madison judge to rule in his lawsuit challenging Wisconsin's abortion ban. Call filed a motion yesterday asking the judge to formalize her ruling without any more oral argument. That would allow the case to move forward. It's widely expected to go all the way to the Wisconsin Supreme Court. Judge Diane Schlipper wrote last month that the law bans feticide, not abortion. The new Wisconsin Supreme Court could be the most liberal ever. Alan Ball teaches history at Marquette University. He's studied the state Supreme Court extensively. He says he expects this court's four liberal justices to vote together more often than any other liberal majority before.
That's what prompts me to think that this coming court is going to be not only more liberal than the 2007-8 court, but the most liberal court we've seen in recent memory.
Ball spoke with the Wisconsin Eye Public Affairs Network this week. Less than 1 week since the shift of the Wisconsin Supreme Court, a second lawsuit has been filed challenging the state's legislative maps. The suit is being brought by mathematicians, statisticians, and computer scientists who believe their insight could assist the drawing of fair maps. Incarcerated Wisconsinites are once again eligible for federal financial aid. Stuart J. Waddles with more.
A recent change made by Congress will allow inmates in Wisconsin to receive federal aid to pay for higher education. This is the first time in nearly 30 years that incarcerated Wisconsinites will be eligible for such aid. The most common aid for people involved in correctional education programs are Pell Grants. That aid is available to people with exceptional financial need. Advocates say education is helpful in reducing the likelihood of people reoffending and returning to prison after they are released. Stuart J. Waddles, Civic Media News.
Old Style Beer is returning to its home in western Wisconsin. After more than two decades being brewed in Milwaukee, Old Style will return to La Crosse. City Brewing Company announced this week they have struck a deal with Pabst Brewing over the rights to Old Style. The company is planning several events surrounding the homecoming of the beer. And that's what Wisconsin needs to know. I'm Luke Mathers, and this is Civic Media News.
For WCFW and the Tap FM, I'm Jimmy Kuska. Here's what you need to know in the Chippewa Valley. This week, a Chippewa County judge will decide whether the lone suspect in last year's murder of 10-year-old Lily Peters will be tried as an adult or if the case will move to juvenile court. A 15-year-old boy is charged with killing Peters and leaving her body in the woods near her home in Chippewa Falls on April 24, 2022. He's being charged with homicide and two counts of sexual assault. If he's tried as an adult and convicted of homicide, he would have to serve a mandatory life sentence. Judge Stephen Gibbs ruled that autopsy photos and videos would be sealed and would address other evidence as the hearings continued this week. Hearings will continue this morning after four witnesses took the stand yesterday. A ruling on where the case will be tried won't happen until at least tomorrow, the earliest day that some of the witnesses will be able to appear in court. And the National Weather Service in the Twin Cities says that today will be hot, highs in the mid to upper 80s, but rain chances are on the way tomorrow and the rest of the week. For Civic Media News, I'm Jimmy Kuska.
The Brewers rock Colorado. Good morning, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers beat the Rockies 12-1 last night at AmFam Field. Milwaukee already had a 9-1 lead in the eighth when rookie Sal Frelick came to the plate. Jeff Levering on Bally Sports Wisconsin.
Frelick, right center, Tolia back. Frelick have a night. Another three-run homer for Sal.
Sal Frelick has 15 runs batted in just his first 16 Major League games, breaking the franchise record set by Paul Molitor. Frelick after the game.
Yeah, I mean, I feel good. I think Bryce's homer there definitely kind of got everything going, though. And, I mean, it's contagious when everybody at the bat rack is fighting. So it was a good day offensively behind a great start from Freddie.
The Brewers pitcher Freddie Peralta striking out 13 batters, tying his career best. How can you explain 12 runs in one night after struggling to get runners across most games? Brewers manager Craig Counsell.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how to explain it. I mean, we've had a couple of really good nights. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, how are we going to explain that? Wish I could. I don't know. Yeah.
Game two of the series, 7-10 tonight. Milwaukee holding on to a 1.5-game lead in the NL Central. College football, the Wisconsin Badgers wrapping up their first week of fall camp at UW-Platteville with a practice under the lights at Pioneer Stadium. Badgers head coach Luke Fickell.
If you've been here, you haven't seen us lose our emotions. That's what one of my challenges is. Can we push ourselves, compete like we do, but not lose our emotions and allow us to play with emotion, but not lose the emotions? We do a lot of football and the mind things, and I think we got to use that really, really well because we don't get this opportunity when we go back to campus.
NFL, the Packers getting back linebacker Rashawn Gary. Gary knows he still has a lot of work to do before he can return to playing.
My circle, my family, everybody know what I've been putting into this. So I also told them that means a lot. You feel me? I'm just happy and excited to be back out here with them.
That's Packers outside linebacker Rashawn Gary. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Daniel's show on a Tuesday morning. It's the 8th day of August. That's right, today's date is 8-8, and it's 7 minutes after 8 o'clock right now. And outside today, going to be another nice, warm, sunny summer day. Lacrosse expecting sunshine, highs around 86. In Eau Claire, sunshine and 84. Amory, sunshine, expecting a high today around 83 degrees. Hayward, mostly sunny, high around 83. In Richland Center, mostly sunny with a high around 85 degrees. A big game for the Brewers last night. Brewers beat the Rockies by a score of 12-1. The Rockies aren't a strong team, but they still can beat you pretty bad. But last night, it was the Brewers on top. 12-1 final score. The Brewers do remain in first place. Game and a half ahead of the Reds. Game two of that three-game series against the Rockies is tonight in Milwaukee. So what is going on in the news today? Well, let me tell you, with this new shared revenue agreement, some small towns in Wisconsin will see increases of 5,000% over what they received previously in shared revenue. Also, a new research project by the U.S. Forest Service aims at bringing back elm trees to the banks of the Mississippi River. And two former Wisconsin lawmakers have an op-ed piece in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel denouncing the big lie that Joe Biden didn't win the 2020 election. That's right. I didn't say it, but I'm going to say it now. These Wisconsin lawmakers, former Wisconsin lawmakers, are Republicans. Okay, so we'll get to that. And also, the big news of the day today is National Frozen Custard Day. So I implore you to please celebrate in moderation. Yes. So let's first talk about this new shared revenue agreement, you know, that the governor and the legislature agreed on in the past. Up until now, I should say, some small towns around Wisconsin would receive a few hundred dollars from the state in shared revenue. Well, that's about to change in a big way. There's a story in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel posted today with a headline that says, "What will Popple River, Wisconsin's second smallest town, do with a 5,000% increase in state funding?" Now, that might sound like a big increase, but I think that they were only getting about $600 and some up until now. So the extra money, I think, will be somewhere around $30,000. And we can get those exact figures if I start reading this story here. This is Dateline, town of Popple River. It says here the five town board members in Popple River, the second smallest town in Wisconsin with just 43 year-round residents, are making a wish list. The town has needs and wants. They need to maintain their 28 miles of road and provide emergency services amid rising costs. They want to replace cracked windows in the nearly century-old town hall and add indoor plumbing so poll workers no longer have to use an outhouse. Quote, there's always places to spend money in a small community, said Mary Sissy Sullivan, the board chairwoman of Popple River. She said if it costs $150 to replace a window and you don't have $150 in your town checkbook, that becomes an issue. And it says here, Popple River is, where cabins are nestled into the Northwoods trees. It says the town has two main roads and one business, a pub and brewery owned by Wade and Katie Hain, H-A-E-N. Is that how you pronounce that? Both newly elected members of the town board. The board may be able to check off more of their wish list soon. Popple River is in line to get a massive increase in the funding the town receives from the state. An increase of 5,070%, to be exact. The type of aid boosted for towns like Popple River is known as shared revenue. It's a stream of funding the state sends to counties, towns, villages, and cities that local governments can use freely. Earlier this summer, Democratic Governor Tony Evers and Republican leaders reached a compromise to boost that funding after over a decade of no increases. That deal gave a minimum 20% increase to municipalities with a population under 110,000 people. Counties and the state's two largest cities, Milwaukee and Madison, will receive at least a 10% increase in shared revenue. But the formulas in the new law favor Wisconsin's tiniest communities. Cedar Rapids in Rusk County, the smallest town in Wisconsin, will receive the highest percentage increase at 5,748%. At least a dozen towns are getting increases of 1,000% or more. Since 2012, Popple River has received $606 each year. That's $606 each year in shared revenue from the state. An eyedropper into a bucket, Sullivan said. Under this new agreement, the town is set to receive a total of $31,329 in 2024 and $32,056 in 2025, though that won't pay for everything on their list. Quote, this new funding is a great windfall for us, Sullivan said. I am extremely grateful for the shared revenue increase because I do think we were possibly overlooked in the past. That's nice of her to word it that way, not wanting to ruffle any feathers, I guess, saying, well, I think we were possibly overlooked in the past. But obviously, they were overlooked with only $600 coming in each year for the past 10 years or so. And then next headline for the next part of the story says many towns will use shared revenue for rising fire and EMS costs. Popple River expects to spend $5,000 of the about $30,000 available for their wish list projects. That's because they need $25,000 to cover the costs of their EMS service, which comes from neighboring Florence County, switching from volunteers to full-time employees. Previously, the cost was $600 a year, the same amount the town originally got from the state. Popple River receives fire services from the volunteer department in Long Lake. If that department happens to go full-time, and this is a quote, by the way, If the department, quote, happens to go full time and we get another hefty increase, then that's another hurdle we're going to have to cover. We don't control how much that's going to be, Sullivan said. Municipalities can use shared revenue for virtually any purpose, but most communities are expected to put it toward rising fire and EMS costs, increased service calls from an aging population, and difficulty recruiting volunteers have led many departments in Wisconsin to switch to full-time staffing, a report from the nonpartisan Wisconsin Policy Forum found. Relying on volunteers is, quote, historically how towns have managed to be so frugal, said Joe Ruth, government affairs director for the Wisconsin Towns Association. He went on and said, you're seeing a shift, more so in towns than elsewhere, where they've already made some of these changes away from volunteers in fire and ambulance and towards more paid on-call or full-time employees, end quote. Ruth added, the shared revenue payments alone won't be enough to fill emergency service gaps. Local governments will receive the payments in July and November over the next 2 years. In 2025 and beyond, the additional shared revenue amounts will be tied to growth in state sales taxes, meaning payments could decrease if there is an economic downturn. While Popple River is optimistic the payments won't drop back down to $600, it's difficult to plan ahead. Quote, if we wanted to, as a board, vote that in 2026, we're going to put indoor plumbing in, and we're going to save this much each year because this is what's going to come in. We can't do that. We would have to leave that as a flexible floating date until we could get enough money for a down payment and make payments on indoor plumbing, Sullivan said. Just how did Popple River get such a large percentage increase after getting so little? It's a question the board members wondered themselves. We'll find out about that after we take a quick break. Stick around. You're tuned into the Stu Daniels Show.
If you own a small to medium-sized business that kept employees on payroll through COVID, you may have a big cash refund waiting for you. The Employee Retention Credit is a tax credit of up to $26,000 per employee. And now, more businesses than ever qualify. The experts at RefundsPro.com specialize in cutting through the red tape of qualifying for this government program. Most of their refunds are over $100,000. Even businesses that have received PPP funds may be eligible. And there are absolutely no fees unless you receive a refund, so there's no reason not to apply. If your business experienced shutdowns, limited capacity, supply chain challenges, or reduced revenue due to COVID, you likely qualify. RefundsPro.com has already helped hundreds of businesses, so don't lose the refund you're owed by missing the deadline. Get started today with a free 5-minute questionnaire at refundspro.com. That's refunds with an S, pro.com.
Larry, it's your mom. Did you know the Civic Media Network covers the whole state of Wisconsin? They can help your business get the word out, whether you want to reach a smidge of folks or just want the whole kit and caboodle. Call 608-819-8255. Okay then, bye.
Civic Media Radio Stations, providing your news, conversations, and fun you won't find anywhere else.
93.5, The Tap. 93.5. The Tap. 93.5. The Tap. 93.5. The Tap.
I'm meteorologist Megan Hatton. A calm weather day for your Tuesday. Mostly sunny skies, high 85. Tonight, partly to mostly clear, the low around 60. Heading into Wednesday, we'll start with some sunshine. Clouds will build for the afternoon. A few spotty showers and storms, high 84. Right now at 62.
Your home for local news, weather, and sports across the airwaves and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
Back to the Stu Daniels Show, 22 and a half minutes after 8 o'clock. For those of you youngsters in the audience, I want you to take notes right now and make sure you look up Willie Dixon later on. One of the most important figures in American blues music, doing Spoonful. Yes. Hey, by the way, 69 degrees right now in La Crosse. Amory at 60 degrees. And just before the break, we were discussing the new shared revenue system that's in place now. And if you live in a small town in Wisconsin, chances are your little town is going to see a big increase in shared revenue coming from Madison. And we've been discussing this story in the Journal Sentinel, where some areas, some towns will receive increases of more than 5,000% compared to what they've seen in the past. This town in the story that they are highlighting, Popple River, used to receive $606 a year for several years from the state. And now they're going to get over $30,000 for the next few years, at least. And we were at the point in the story where it says, where they're asking the question, just how did Popple River get such a large percentage increase after getting so little? It's a question the board members wondered for themselves. For communities like Popple River with fewer than 5,000 people, the formula, the shared revenue formula, makes a calculation based on the municipality's population and then adds $30,000. That means some towns that were getting only a few thousand dollars a year will now receive much more, though the new amounts may not cover all of their costs. In total, those smallest communities will see a shared revenue increase of 64.8% compared to a 17.3% increase for municipalities with more than 30,000 people. The Wisconsin Policy Forum found in an analysis of the state budget and shared revenue agreement. Even towns larger than Popple River are undoubtedly the winners of the shared revenue deal. Before the new law, towns received an estimated 5.6% of the $753 million sent each year to counties and municipalities in Wisconsin. But now they'll receive about a tenth of more than $1 billion in shared revenue, amounting to a 157% increase. Compare that to villages and counties, which are getting about a 55% increase over the current amounts. Cities will see around a 20% increase. While the shared revenue law provides a funding boost for every local government, not all will benefit equally. Milwaukee is getting a 10% increase in shared revenue. That's an additional $21.7 million in addition to their $217 million that they received initially. So that's a 10% increase, right? And while the compromise enabled sales taxes to rise in the Milwaukee area, came with additional strings for the state's largest municipality that included eliminating much of the power of the civilian board that oversees the city's police and fire departments, which led the fire and police commission's chair and vice chair to resign in protest. Quote, "I think what it shows is we need a shared revenue formula that can be more thoughtful for the diversity of entities that we have in our state," said Senator Lena Taylor, a Democrat representing Milwaukee. She said a 5,000% increase for that community is probably only holding them over for a few years. We're giving them that increase, but still not giving them the tools they need to go forward while we're saying we have this tremendous surplus. And back in Popple River, Sullivan said funding differences and decisions about whether to spend, keep, or return the state's now $4 billion budget surplus to taxpayers are, quote, "in the political world that I try to stay out of. It's very generous of the state. I will always be appreciative, and I'd rather be appreciative than critical," Sullivan said of the shared revenue increase. "We're just trying to keep our little small town afloat." So good news for small towns all over Wisconsin. More money coming in from the state from the shared revenue. So that is good news. We got 27 and a half minutes after 8 o'clock. And by the way, if you want to give us a call and let us know what's on your mind, feel free. The phone number is 715-388-7155. Going to take a break. Stick around. You're tuned into the Stu Daniels Show.
Looking for more local programming? Check out our website, civicmedia.us, to see our entire lineup.
CBS News Brief. Traffic officers, lifeguards, and gardeners are among thousands of city workers staging a one-day walkout in Los Angeles. Union Rep Gilda Valdez.
Our members are really fed up. The city cannot treat our workers this way and think that we're not going to call them out.
Ohioans are voting in a special election to increase the majority needed to change the state constitution. Rachel Bells heads the group Ohio Citizen Action.
It seems as though they know it's about the abortion constitutional amendment for November, that the timing is about that. Basically make it 10% harder to pass that in November.
In Bray, Ireland. Teary hometown fans are paying respect as Sinead O'Connor's casket carried past her family home ahead of a Muslim burial.
After seeing and living her whole journey, she inspired me
to be more myself.
Singer was found dead at her London apartment last month. CBS News Brief. I'm Deborah Rodriguez.
The Civic Media Network of radio stations across Wisconsin. We are your hometown radio, refreshed.
For WCFW and the Tap FM, I'm Jimmy Cuska. Here's what you need to know in the Chippewa Valley. This week, a Chippewa County judge will decide whether the lone suspect in last year's murder of 10-year-old Lily Peters will be tried as an adult or if the case will move to juvenile court. A 15-year-old boy is charged with killing Peters and leaving her body in the woods near her home in Chippewa Falls on April 24, 2022. He's being charged with homicide and two counts of sexual assault. If he's tried as an adult and convicted of homicide, he would have to serve a mandatory life sentence. Judge Stephen Gibbs ruled that autopsy photos and videos would be sealed and would address other evidence as the hearings continued this week. Hearings will continue this morning after four witnesses took the stand yesterday. A ruling on where the case will be tried won't happen until at least tomorrow, the earliest day that some of the witnesses will be able to appear in court. And the National Weather Service in the Twin Cities says that today will be hot, highs in the mid to upper 80s, but rain chances are on the way tomorrow and the rest of the week. For Civic Media News, I'm Jimmy Cuska.
I've got some cheese curds that I'm willing to share. Then I want to ride that giant slide over there. So if you've got 11 days to spare, won't you come with me to the Wisconsin State Fair? Won't you come with me to the Wisconsin? The great state of Wisconsin State Fair.
There's something for everyone at the Wisconsin State Fair, presented by U.S. Cellular, August 3rd through the 13th.
Does your financial strategy include your hopes and dreams? What matters most to you? For over 100 years, Thrivent has helped clients like you find financial solutions for life's important goals. Explore a full range of options, from financial advice and investments to insurance, banking, and generosity programs. To have a heart-to-heart about your finances, contact Mandy Roberts, who you may recognize as Mandy Wright. Call her at 715-470-1303. 715-470-1303. Mandy Roberts proudly serves the Central Wisconsin area. For more details, visit thrivent.com/disclosure.
I'm Captain Ann Maxson with the Wisconsin State Patrol. Safety on our highways is a team effort. Every day, our troopers and inspectors focus on keeping people and commerce moving safely. Drivers can do their part to prevent crashes and needless tragedies by remembering two simple things. Buckle up, phones down. Thanks for helping us move towards zero deaths on Wisconsin roads.
A safety message, sponsored by the U.S. and Wisconsin DOTs.
Thanks for listening to your local Civic Media radio station. Learn more on our website, civicmedia.us.
Don't cry now.
here. Steve Daniels Show on a Tuesday morning. Music from Jerry Garcia doing Bird Song as we commemorate these days known as the Days Between, marking Jerry Garcia's birth on August 1st and his passing on August 9th. And 8:35 right now, 63 degrees in Eau Claire, 58 degrees way up in Hayward. Everybody expecting highs today in the low to mid 80s. No rain in the forecast anyplace. But I want to get to an op-ed piece, an opinion piece that is published in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel today and posted at their website. This is an important piece, and it's by a couple of Republicans. And, you know, we're only, a couple of weeks away from the big Republican debate coming up in Milwaukee. I think it's like 2 weeks from tomorrow or something. But one thing that's not up for debate in Milwaukee, according to the headline of this op-ed piece, Joe Biden won Wisconsin in 2020. The subheadline here says two Republican leaders refute the lies that Donald Trump won Wisconsin in 2020 election. And this piece is co-written by two former Republican lawmakers, former Congressman Reed Ribble from Appleton. He served from 2011 to 2017. Also, State Senator Kathy Bernier from Chippewa. She served in the legislature from 2011 to 2023. Both defeated incumbent Democrats. And they're members of Keep Our Republic, which is a nonpartisan civic education nonprofit. And I like all parts of that. I like things that are nonpartisan, things that provide civic education, and things that are nonprofit. So you got to appreciate an organization like Keep Our Republic. And this piece from them starts out like this. It says, "We are proud Wisconsin Republicans. We know how purple our state is and that the eyes of the nation will be watching us. We know that the 2024 election will be the most contentious and expensive in the history of our state. We know that the votes of our neighbors could very well decide the future course of America as our nation approaches her 250th birthday. While much has been discussed about the Republican presidential debate in Milwaukee on August 23rd, one fact should not be up for debate. The winner of Wisconsin's 10 electoral votes in 2020 was President Joe Biden. Destructive allegations took root in the days and weeks following November 3rd of 2020, Election Day. These persisted for months, and in some corners of our state, they persist to this day. Individuals have called into question the professionalism of clerks and poll workers across our state's 72 counties. These clerks and poll workers are our neighbors and our fellow congregants. They are mothers and fathers. They are patriots committed to upholding the essence of our democracy envisioned by our founding fathers." And they go on and say that large numbers of Wisconsinites question the accuracy of the election, and allegations of widespread voter fraud have engulfed weekly conversations. Concerns were raised about widespread use of vote-by-mail, vote dumps at central count facilities in the middle of the night, and the software used by electronic voting machines. As Republican leaders from different corners of our state, we have sought to educate ourselves on how our votes are canvassed and certified in the period after polls close on Election Day. More importantly, we have committed to educate our communities each month between now and next November. As Republicans, we believe in the rule of law. An independent judiciary was also envisioned by our founding fathers. Since November of 2020, our courts have been awash in election-related litigation. While we are not attorneys, we have meticulously studied the claims made in these cases and decisions made by judges. We are taking it upon ourselves to educate our communities about the role of the courts in challenging the electoral process. Some have alleged that more votes were cast than registered voters in Wisconsin. This is not accurate. What is a fact is that 2020 turnout statewide was 72.3% in 2004, and in 2012, turnout also exceeded 70%. Our hope is that high voter turnout continues for all elections held in Wisconsin. This is healthy for our democracy. With the eyes of the nation on Milwaukee at the debate, and again at the National Republican Party Convention, we hope that all individuals seeking public office can acknowledge these facts. We hope to be a resource to anyone seeking to learn the facts of how Wisconsin administers its elections. We hope that our national dialogue, driven by the candidates who will visit our state, will focus on the future direction of our nation rather than relitigate November 2020. As we approach our nation's 250th birthday, we are reminded of the wisdom of Benjamin Franklin. He wisely stated, "A republic, if you can keep it." We hope all Republicans and Democrats will always be committed to uphold and protect our Democratic Republic. Some refreshing words from a couple of Republicans. What's up with that? It seems like many Republicans these days just want to toe the party line. Although we did see one Republican step up yesterday, or last night, I saw an interview with Ron DeSantis from Florida, finally admitting that Donald Trump did not win the presidential election and that Joe Biden won the presidential election and is the president. So that was refreshing to see as well. It's like it's gotten to the point where if some of these Republicans just tell the truth, it's like you get excited. It's like, oh, they're good. Good job, man. Thank you for telling the truth. So we've got 8:42 and a half right now. I want to get to a little bit of the story about the elm trees along the Mississippi River. There is a story in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel posted today. It says there is a project underway now to bring back the elm trees. The headline says Dutch elm disease came first, then the emerald ash borer. Now an urgent push is on to restore trees. And the dateline here is Reno Bottoms. It says the elm tree that towered over Andy Meyer was a survivor. At 37 inches around and about 150 years old, it had so far avoided Dutch elm disease, the fungus that wiped out many of its neighbors growing along the upper Mississippi River. It says Meyer, who is a U.S. Army Corps of Engineers forester based in the La Crosse area, pointed to another elm close by that had fallen victim, proof that the disease had been in the area and left this one tree unscathed, or so he thought. Quote, "This one leaf here is a little concerning," he said, pulling on a low-hanging branch on which a leaf had turned pale yellow. That is the first warning sign of the fungus. It could have been just a thirsty tree showing signs of a dry summer, but he'd have to return next year to find out for sure. Says Dutch elm disease was first discovered in the United States in the 1930s and swept through the country in waves in the decades that followed. It's been tough on the forests of the upper Mississippi River floodplain, because elm trees used to have a foundational role in the tree canopy, providing shade for the understory and the wildlife that lives within it. And today, those floodplain forests are struggling against a multitude of threats: excessive flooding, invasive grasses, and the destruction wrought by the emerald ash borer, all while Dutch elm continues to strike. But a research project from the United States Forest Service could turn the future of elm trees around. The agency is seeking survivor trees, ones that have lasted decades in the forest, to take buds from and produce copies. Those trees could hold some genetic secret to resisting the disease, and those copies then could help them repopulate. Quote, if we could bring elm back into this landscape, it would really change things a lot for us, Meyer said. Elm trees used to be a significant component of floodplain forest communities. Their seeds ripen in late spring when few other seeds are available for hungry birds and other animals. They're also a host for a variety of caterpillar species, and their wood holds up well against flooding, which happens every year. As such, Dutch elm disease has wreaked havoc, particularly on American elm trees. In Wisconsin, two-thirds of large American elms growing on timberland were wiped out between 1983 and 2021, according to data from the Forest Service's Forest Inventory and Analysis Program. The species itself isn't in danger of extinction. The number of total elms in Wisconsin has increased from roughly 192 million to 244 million in that time frame, but the trees are killed before they're old enough to perform their traditional ecological role. Got to take a quick break. Stick around. You're tuned into the Stu Daniels Show. Snow and rain.
Did you know the Wisconsin State Fair is 172 years old? It still celebrates the industries important to our state's history, like agriculture. But every year, new attractions and items are added. This year, there's more than 100 new foods to try. So what do you think topped the culinary list last year? Flamin' Hot Cheetos Chicken on a Stick? Deep-fried Old Fashioned? Or Pino Pretzel Popper Brat? The answer's coming up. The Wisconsin State Fair didn't start in its current home of West Allis. The first was in Janesville along the Rock River, then moved to different locations the next 40 years. The original cream puff has been around almost as long. Close to 400,000 are gobbled up every year. So which food was number one last year? It was the Pino Pretzel Popper Brat. It came out on top. The State Fair is a true slice of Wisconsin, and it runs through August 13th. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network. She's the newest of seven elected Wisconsin Supreme Court justices. Janet Protasiewicz begins her 10-year term in August when she is sworn in. It's a long-time tradition which includes use of the court's seal created in 1848. But did you know it features the scales of justice, but not carried by a blindfolded Greek goddess? Instead, a hand holds the scales, representing justice is in human hands. It also means everything is official once the seal is stamped on any court documents. For Civic Media, I'm Terry Barr.
This is 93.5 The Tap.
I'm meteorologist Megan Hatton. A calm weather day for your Tuesday. Mostly sunny skies, high 85. Tonight, partly to mostly clear, the low around 60. Heading into Wednesday, we'll start with some sunshine. Clouds will build for the afternoon. A few spotty showers and storms, high 84. Currently, it's 64.
Civic Media Radio Stations, providing your news, conversations, and fun you won't find anywhere else.
You must leave now, take what you need, you think will last. But whatever you wish to keep, you better grab it fast. He understands you, orphan, with his gun, crying like a fire in the sun. Look out, the saints are coming through, and it's all over now, baby blue.
Yes, welcome back to the Stu Daniels Show, 8:51 on this Tuesday morning. It's all over now, baby blue. Bob Dylan for you. And it's good to hear a little bit of Bob Dylan every day, right? It's like nutrition for your soul. Hey, we've got 67 degrees in Richland Center right now. Also 69 degrees in La Crosse. And just before the break, we were discussing this story in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel about the effort by the U.S. Forest Department to bring elm trees back to the Mississippi River area. And, of course, they've been under stress in recent years in several different ways. But, of course, the big issue was these emerald ash borers. The headline from this story in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel by Madeline Heim says, Dutch elm disease came first, then the emerald ash borer. Now there is an urgent push to restore the elm trees along the Mississippi River. And we ended, let's see, right here, where it says that elm trees used to be a significant component of floodplain forest communities. Their seeds ripen in late spring when few other seeds are available for hungry birds and other animals. And they're also a host for a variety of caterpillar species, and their wood holds up well against flooding, which happens every year. And we talked about the fact that many of these trees, even though there are more of them now, they're killed by disease and fungus before they're old enough to perform their traditional ecological role. The disease spreads from tree to tree by way of an insect, the elm bark beetle, or through the roots of trees growing close together. The fungus enters the vascular tissue of a tree, creating blockages so the tree can't take up water, which eventually causes it to wilt and die. And in some cases, that can happen in just a few weeks. So what allows the survivor trees to resist the fungus? It's a bit of a mystery, but it's likely that they have the ability to wall off the infected area and prevent it from reaching the entire tree, said Linda Hogan, a forest pathologist for the Forest Service. She, Linda Hogan, is coordinating the project that aims to restore the elm trees. In the past year, Army Corps and Forest Service staff have collected buds from 18 large surviving elm trees. In all, Meyer said, the Corps has identified between 50 and 60 elms that are bigger than 24 inches around and thus likely to be survivors, including the one that we mentioned earlier with the yellowing leaf. And in parentheses here, it says, even if it ends up dying, it still survived for a long time and could hold some answers. Those 18 buds were sent to a Forest Service greenhouse to be grafted, in other words, attached to another elm seedling, so that seedling grows up with the genetic material from the surviving tree. And once the seedling starts to grow, Forest Service staff will cut off shoots and repot those to create copies of the tree that have their own root systems. Once enough of those cloned trees exist, researchers will inject Dutch elm disease into them, and that will determine if they're really resistant or if the original tree was just lucky, Hogan said. The final step is to plant survivors out in the real world where they can produce seeds that are likely to grow into healthy, long-living elm trees. And there's a quote here. It says, "Our end goal is to be able to provide elms that will be able to survive and persist on the landscape so they can reclaim that ecological role of surviving to be the big trees," she said. The elms on the upper Mississippi are part of a national effort by the Forest Service to restore these trees. 2 years earlier, Hogan said, they began the same process using a group of American elm trees growing in the Chippewa National Forest in northern Minnesota, which not only are potentially resistant to Dutch elm disease, but are also able to withstand cold temperatures. The urgency of reviving elm trees has been hastened by the emerald ash borer's devastation of ash trees, Hogan said, because a forest needs to have several tree species to be resilient. The forests along the upper Mississippi, for example, were traditionally maple ash elm forests. If the ash borer wipes out those trees, it leaves the entire ecosystem vulnerable if a maple tree disease were to come along. Like any work that involves trees, though, it isn't going to happen quickly. It will take 7 to 10 years before the cloned trees are ready to be subjected to the fungus, Hogan said, and then another 7 to 10 years after that, that they'll start producing seeds. For land managers that are antsy to start forest reforestation, that's a long time to wait. In the meantime, they can use seeds from the survivor trees to plant more elms, she said, but only time will tell what the secret to survivorship may be. And then here, it mentions that the person who wrote this story, Madeline Heim, is a Report for America Corps reporter. Report for America Corps reporter who writes about environmental issues in the Mississippi River watershed and across Wisconsin. And if you're not familiar with the Report for America Corps, I would suggest you look it up. It's a cool way that the U.S. government has put reporters out into the field many places now where reporters are gone because of cutbacks by newspapers, etc. It's 8:57, almost 8:58 right now. We're going to take a top of the hour break for the news. Stick around. You're tuned in to the Stu Daniels Show.
There is unrest in the forest. There is trouble with the trees. For the maples want more sunlight and the oaks ignore their pleas.
Does your financial strategy include your hopes and dreams? What matters most to you? For over 100 years, Thrivent has helped clients like you find financial solutions for life's important goals. Explore a full range of options, from financial advice and investments to insurance, banking, and generosity programs. To have a heart-to-heart about your finances, contact Mandy Roberts, who you may recognize as Mandy Wright. Call her at 715-470-1303. 715-470-1303. Mandy Roberts proudly serves the Central Wisconsin area. For more details, visit thrivent.com/disclosure.
She's the newest of 7 elected Wisconsin Supreme Court justices. Janet Protasiewicz begins her 10-year term in August when she is sworn in. It's a long-time tradition which includes use of the court's seal created in 1848. But did you know it features the scales of justice, but not carried by a blindfolded Greek goddess? Instead, a hand holds the scales, representing justice is in human hands. It also means everything is official once the seal is stamped on any court documents. For Civic Media, I'm Terry Barr.